All right, we're back. This is Ed Mate.
And Lewis Airy.
We're back here for 2023. We're going to talk about some rules. We're going to talk about spirit of the game. We're going to just chat and talk about a lot of things today. So this is not a normal year. This is a rules change year. We haven't had one of those in a while. I guess 4 years.
4 years, yeah. And like the last time where it was 3 years between changes, this was a full four-year revision period. So as of January 1, we are in the new set of rules.
So let's jump right in. And again, if you're a new listener to Spirit of the Game, welcome. And really what we'd like to talk about here is kind of a little bit of philosophy, kind of the why behind the rules. I attended my first rule seminar in 20. I'm 20. What am I talking about? I'm much older than that. I sound like I'm pretending I'm a young guy like you. Was in, I think it was 1989. And I was so frustrated by the lack of ability to answer why questions. And it was almost like, if you have a why question, don't answer it. Don't ask it here. The USJ has gotten much better. They will take why questions. Because to me, if you don't understand why, then you're just memorizing stuff that doesn't make any sense. So it's been very helpful to me, because I think if you understand the why, then you really understand the rule and you don't have to memorize stuff. Now, that's my perspective. The letter of the law guys, like you, you know, maybe have a different take on that.
Well, I think, like you said, I think the USJ has done a really good job over the last several years of expanding on the why behind the rules. That first showed up in 2019 when they added purpose statements into the beginning of every rule, explaining what the meaning was behind each rule and why the rule's written that way and what's the purpose behind the actual rulemaking mechanisms within each rule. So I think they've done a really good job with those purpose statements, and they continue to show up in the book today.
Yeah, it was interesting, because I was lucky enough to be on the rules committee when those were being developed. I had nothing to do with the writing of those, but they were originally called principles. And the concern was that if it's a principle, then people would interpret them and think they're a rule. So purpose was kind of they thought a better way to, and I think they're fantastic. And I've always said, if you take the purpose statements and you just read those, study them, understand them, they're clear and you get it. You get what golf is meant to be. And then take it to the next step level. So I think it's a great addition. I suspect that very few people read them, and they probably dive, that's human nature, right, to try to find the answer they're looking for. But for those that take the time, and if you're listening to this podcast, read the purpose statements. They really are helpful.
And there's not only purpose statements at the beginning of every rule. Some subheadings within the rules have their own purpose statements. Right. You'll find that within several subheadings of each rules, there are purpose statements for the subheadings. So it's not just at every beginning of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way to 25 now. There are some rules that have multiple purpose statements built in when there's a certain subject that's really important.
Okay, so let's move into topic number one. This thing is, that's a little inside joke. So topic number one is distance. So I wrote a little fun little quip for our website. And really the lens through which we're going to talk about this is the model local rule. One of the overarching themes that you hear repeatedly from the USGA and the RNA is that there's only one set of rules. That whether you're in Afghanistan or Africa or America, you're playing by the same set of rules. And whether you're a two handicapper, a top 20 player in the rule, or a 35 handicapper, you're playing by the same set of rules. Well, that sounds great, but it's not true. Never has been and never will be. And it's not even true when you start getting even a little bit more technical. So on the real top layer of that philosophy, you're playing a different set of rules simply by picking a tee. I mean, let's be honest. You're adjusting your distance. You're not playing the same game. And every group is going to make their own, make up their own rules. They just sort of have a sort of loose understanding. But now let's say you really are a little more serious. You now have, and this isn't new in 2023. This has been around for a long time, and that's local rules, which we now refer to as model local rules, which make adjustments to the sort of, think of it as the Bible. And then you say, well, here's some, subtext that you can apply that really modify the Bible. So this is not a new concept. So in my opinion, when you have a rule and then you have many opportunities to change it, the rule is no longer a rule. It is a suggestion. So let's just talk about, I'd like you to just sort of speak to model local rules as a category and how you think what their purpose is.
So for those that aren't familiar with model local rules or have no idea what we're talking about, those sets of, I guess what you could call them rules, because they do in a sense make a rule making function. Those are found in the committee procedure section of the rule book. But in essence, what a model local rule is it gives an example of how to modify either a procedure, or something within the existing rules 1 through 25 that may fit a certain committee's preference or a certain competition's function. So, for example, one of the model local rules that most everyone's familiar with, model local rule E3, which is more commonly known as preferred lies or lift, clean, and place. That is an example of something that is altering a core principle of the game, which is play the ball as it lies. Right? When you're essentially playing preferred lies, we're no longer applying that core principle. We're altering it in a way that still fits the purpose of our competition.
Okay. So I kind of false advertising. I said, let's talk about distance. So the reason I pivoted to model local rules is the upshot of my article, was let's use a very well established, function or established mechanism, model local rules, to deal with distance. Because really the purpose of model local rules, in my opinion, is to make modifications based on skill level, based on course conditions that are not sort of normal. So when it comes to skill level, this is the perfect opportunity to introduce a model local rule that introduces very similar to the one ball rule. This isn't a new idea. The one ball rule was introduced whatever year it was, when players were starting to change balls on every single hole, or potentially to take advantage of the lack of any kind of limitation in that space. And they could have a hard ball for this hole, a soft ball for that hole. They said, no, you got to use the same ball for the entire stipulated round, a term that no longer applies. And again, it was for skilled players. Never was intended to come into play for a higher handicap player. So I am befuddled that why we can't, it seems so simple to me. Why don't we introduce a model local rule that says, if you're in these competitions, we're going to require a limited flight ball. End of story. You've dealt with the skilled players. The game of golf is still the game of golf. I've been watching, because I'm a nerd, I love the Golf Channel, and I watch these Shell's Wonderful Worlds of Golf. And it's amazing to me to watch. The one I was watching recently was at Olympic Club, 6,600 yards. And Roberto DiVincenzo, and I can't remember who the other player was, but they were hitting 5 irons into par fours. And they were hitting a 7 iron from 150. Now, again, you say it's all relative. No, it's not, because golf was intended to be 1-shot holes, 2-shot holes, and 3-shot holes. And 3-shot holes no longer exist on the PGA Tour. They don't ever use a club in their bag other than something that's in the, in the lofted category. So again, I know I'm on a soapbox, but help me understand why we couldn't do that. And I know this isn't really a rules topic. It's really more a governance and probably a legal topic. Are they worried about Titleist and Callaway and TaylorMade suing them? Because I mean, already the equipment. So help me here.
So I think, actually, it brings up a good point that I was thinking about just now. If we could afford to bring on guests to the show, Thomas Pagel would be a great guest to weigh in on this topic. But I think going back to what you said about the one ball rule, I think the one ball rule is an example, I think, would be somewhat of a precedent that's already been set for something like this in the future. Even though the one ball rule isn't widely used anymore outside of PGA Tour and USGA, but I think because of what's been set with one ball rule in the past, I think that could open up a door in the future to allow something like this. Now, you start talking about the manufacturers and you start getting into the weeds on the equipment rules, it starts to get a little more complicated, based on introducing the concept of a single ball across a wide array like the PGA Tour. But
yeah, and again,
I do think it is possible that it's at some point in the future, not today, maybe not in 2024, but at some point in the future, that could be introduced.
Well, and again, we're not here to talk about the how that would be done and get into the aerospace engineering discussion. That's not our purpose. Now, you hear people debate, you know, whether the ball itself is the cause, whether it's the shaft and, you know, the size of the head. And well, the point is, there are ways to limit the flight of a ball in one way or another. It could be done. If we can engineer it, I think the best engineering minds could figure that one out. So again, staying with the theme of model local rules, we've covered distance. The other thing I wanted to, this goes both ways. So sometimes you have a model local rule that's for less skilled players. And a great example, and you can help me out, which would, the number, because you're a numbers guy. The model local rule that was introduced in 2019 that fundamentally changes really a core principle of golf, and that is the alternative to stroke and distance, which is a brilliant, brilliant local rule that makes playing by the rules possible for the average player. Because on a busy public golf course, if you lose a ball, you're not going back to the tee. There's no way. So previously, you had nothing. You're basically, if you were cared about playing by the book, you were done. You're like, well, I guess I'm disqualified. And being that, that's what I would, it was in my youth, that would really bother me because I'd like, well, I don't have a score for the day because I can't go back to the tee. Now, legally, you can estimate where the ball is lost or out of bounds, equidistant, go into the fairway, drop a ball and off you go with a two-stroke penalty. So my point here is that sometimes a model local rule is written the other way, not for the skilled player, but for the less skilled player.
Yeah, I think across the wide array of model local rules, I think it captures both parts of that spectrum. Like you said, it captures high-skilled players with the one-ball rule and other equipment-limiting factors, and it captures the everyday player with model local rule E5, which is the one you just described. I think really what it's trying to do is it's trying to capture every scenario for every golfer that could possibly need alteration depending on the day and depending on what type of competition is occurring.
Right. And so the point is we already have multiple sets of rules. So this idea that there's one set of rules for all golfers is not true. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing. So I think it's just we're holding on to this last sort of, and again, I think, so anyway, let's move on. I'm just going to have way too much fun with that cowbell, but we're staying with model local rules. So next topic is 2023. So talk about changes in new model local rules this year or adjusted model local rules, staying with the theme of skilled, less skilled. That maybe are worth talking about.
So there's been a couple adjustments. One of the biggest adjustments that probably will affect the most amount of golfers, you know, every day or players who play in competitions is the adjustment to Model Local Rule G9, which when Model Local Rule G9 was introduced, it altered Rule 4, which was equipment. What it did was it altered what happens when a club is broken or significantly damaged during the round. Prior to 2023, but in 2019, when the rules were modernized and basically when the code was rewritten, Rule 4 was basically written in 2019 to where a player normally would not be able to replace a damaged or significantly broken club unless it wasn't his doing. If it happened from natural forces or if, you know, something outside of his realm caused that club to break, he wouldn't be able to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
2023 comes in, Rule 4.1 has been rewritten, or that player can.
By the way, let me introduce, it could be her too, right?
Not it just, could be her.
Okay.
I apologize. There you go. The spirit of the game is an inclusive podcast. Let that be known.
Okay, fair.
So a player now in 2019 or 2023, a player could replace a broken or damaged club with Rule 4.1. However, Model Local Rule G9 still does exist. It didn't go away. What it did in 2023 was it changed a little bit, where now it gives a committee a little more leeway on how they describe significantly broken, damaged. There could be certain requirements that a committee puts in that a club has to meet those requirements to be able to be replaced.
Okay, so keeping...
So 4.1 as the basic rule allows replacement for a broken club. Model Local Rule G9 takes it another step further and says the club has to be this.
So staying with the skilled and unskilled. and sort of the purpose behind these monolith rules. What's the purpose here? Are we trying to, why would skill matter on broken clubs? If a club's broken, why do we care? You know, why do we need this?
I don't think skill is 100%, you know, the defining factor here, but for a casual player on a Saturday, if something happens with their club, you know, a crack goes across the face and it goes into the hosel and something separates, well, that probably is going to meet the definition of broken or significantly damaged. A small crack on the face might not, but if it's big enough, maybe it could. The PGA Tour, if a player's club cracks, well, maybe the PGA Tour is going to say that doesn't quite meet our definition of broken just yet. It's going to have to separate, or, you know, it's going to have to come in two pieces.
Okay. So again, with equipment trucks,
a little more lenient for a player who's playing at Common Ground on a Saturday versus someone who's going to be playing at Castle Pines and the BMW next year.
Yeah. And I a great example. Once again, the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, they have equipment trucks on site. They can do a lot of things that the casual average player cannot. Okay. There's also, I understand, some adjustments to the model local rule dealing with green reading materials. Clearly, in my opinion, this is a skilled versus non-skilled topic.
So really, the biggest component of this is that the restrictions around green reading materials now with model local rule G10, that restriction is only going to be applied to strokes made on the green. Now, if you're, you know, in the general area, or if you're making a shot to the green from somewhere else other than the putting green, the restrictions on those green reading materials are not going to apply. It's only going to apply to strokes made on the putting green.
So in other words, I could have an incredibly detailed heat map in my hands that shows incredibly fine, you know, down to the millimeter in approaching. But once I get to the green, I can't use that material.
As long as that heat map is in your hand or near the general area, then that's going to be okay.
So why are we doing this? Can you understand? Now again, let's just back this up. This is right in the spirit of the game purpose. Mm-hmm. The game of golf is a game of skill. You have 14 clubs. We're not going to allow you to use 100 clubs. Mm-hmm. You can only get advice from your partner or your caddy. Not, you can't be calling a friend, getting a lifeline. Your equipment needs to comply to the rules. And oh, by the way, part of the art of golf is reading greens. So the putting green material maps were introduced to make green reading a science rather than an art. And they work. I mean, they're, as greens improve in the quality, the agronomic quality, and as putting, the technology gets better with putters, these guys can, and gals can just guarantee, a result. So the USGA introduced this change, to deal with, this change by saying, we're not going to allow green reading materials. So it sounds like I'm stumbling here. They tell us about how they started to deal with this as a governing body, because they clearly recognize this is a problem. Mm-hmm. Golf should include the ability to read a green. So what did the USGA do prior to this year to deal with that?
But going back to, I think, the basis of this, and this, I'm struggling to remember what purpose statement this is in, but you know, it talks about, you know, but one of the fundamental skills of golf is you have to overcome challenges on your own. Now, again, that's altered a little bit with the help of a caddy and some other things, but most challenges on the golf course, you have to overcome with your own skill. I think where ultimately that skill becomes magnified is on the putting green, because the ball's rolled across the ground. There's more influence put on the ball based on it rolling on the ground rather than throughout the air. So I think because that skill of getting the ball from A to B is magnified on the putting green, you know, ultimately what makes that skill less of a factor is those green reading materials. And trying to remove that help from those green reading materials is where the USGA kind of started to step in and say, hey, well, we need to introduce some sort of skill back into this. I think some small part of it probably had to do with pace of play in the grand scheme of things. And you're probably no stranger to seeing players take 3-4 minutes on a putting green trying to read it. Go going to the green book, pulling something else out of there, you know, looking at something else, going back to reading it. So I think pace of play probably had an ultimate underlying factor, but, you know, trying to limit these green reading materials with the introduction of the model local rule back. And I think this model local rule was introduced in 21. It wasn't exactly at the start of 2019. I think it got introduced sometime in 21. I think that was when the USGA kind of stepped in and said, hey, we need to, there needs to be something to put more skill back into the challenge on the green.
I totally agree with that. So what I'm confused by is what changed this year. Is the same philosophy governing here where we're like, we're not going to, the green reading materials are limited.
With limiting it to strokes made on the putting green, I think it goes back to the main challenge where that skill is magnified is on the putting green. With
so can you use green reading materials on the putting green? Yes
or
no?
You can.
But they have to comply.
They have to meet certain requirements laid out.
So really that's no change.
It's not a huge change. The biggest change was, like I said, with that, limits in that material was limited to strokes made on the putting green.
Okay.
Strokes made off the putting green from a bunker, penalty area, ding area, general area. The green reading materials aren't necessarily limited when you're making strokes in those areas. So if you're going to use something else in a yardage book that doesn't exactly meet those green reading material requirements, but it's not a stroke made from the putting green, then you're not going to be restricted.
Okay. What else? What else do we need to talk about when it comes to model local rules 2023 that our listeners, you know, might be interested in and not getting really into some of the stuff that maybe is only going to affect you and others who are rules nerds?
If you're a casual player, you know, and you don't play in events or you don't, maybe you don't subscribe to submitting a clean gin score, as I like to say, if you play by the rules and you submit everything, for your handicap, kosher, then model local rules probably aren't going to come into a factor for you daily. The two big ones I can think of right now off the top of my head is if you play in USGA qualifiers, or anything that uses the one ball rule, the penalty for breach of the one ball rule has been reduced.
Okay.
So prior to 2023, if you breached the one ball rule every time you breached it,
two strokes
was the general penalty.
Yeah.
Or now it's going to be one stroke for breaching the one ball rule. Okay. So a little bit of less severe. And that goes along with some other things that the USGA has reduced within the main rules. The penalties have been reduced.
Well, so I do have a new topic, and related to 2023, two actually. Talk about the back on a line relief, and the change there. This also is sort of a model local rule, but explain what's changed here.
So we're going to go back in the time capsule to 2018, actually prior to 2019, just in general. Prior to 2019, when you were taking back on the line relief, whether it's for unplayable ball or a ball at that time in water hazard, you were dropping as close as you could to a specific point on the line that you chose. Dropping from shoulder height at that point, you were trying to drop as close to a given point as possible. With relief areas introduced in 2019, that concept of back on the line was altered a little bit. That's where you're still picking out a point on the line, you know, going back as far as you would like. But with that invention of the relief area, you could drop within one club length on either side of that point you picked out, which was called the reference point on the line. So
it's more of a corridor, two club length wide, using the line itself as the pivot point.
Correct. Yes. Wherever you picked out that reference point on the line, you could drop off the line as long as it was still within that relief area, within one club length, dropping from knee height in 2019, and you were fulfilling the requirements of a good drop.
Okay.
But now in 2023, we're somewhat blending the two a little bit here, taking the old relief procedure and the 2019 relief procedure, still picking out that line. We're still picking out a reference point on the line, but what's the biggest change here is that we're having to drop from knee height on that reference point on the line.
So no longer getting the latitude of club length.
We're no longer really using the full relief area to get that ball back in play. We still do have a relief area with back on the line relief. Now having to drop on the line at whatever point we pick as our reference point, that ball could roll up to one club length in any direction and create a relief area. Now, if I drop on a line, you know, drop my ball from knee height on the line, it rolls 3 feet to my right or 3 feet forward. It's probably still going to be 3 feet is, you know, 36 inches. That's still within probably a club length for most of us. Mm-hmm. That's still going to be in what's called the relief area for back on the line relief. It could go in any direction. Prior to 2019, forward wasn't part of that relief area, closer to the hole, as I should say. It wasn't part of the standard relief area, except in the case of a specific model local rule. Now in 2023, even if my ball rolls forward on the line, as I drop it on the line, and it stays within one club length, that ball's going to be.
Yeah, and so very well summed up there, but restated in a very simple way, because this affects everybody. You're going to.
And if you were confused at all by what I just said, there's a fantastic diagram in Rule 14.
Just yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and it's so simple. I mean, you hit your ball into a penalty area and you choose to exercise the option of keeping the point where it crossed the edge of that penalty area and go back on a line. That's what we mean by back on a line, keeping that point between you and the flag stick. And this happens every golf course has this situation almost mm-hmm. without exception. You drop it from knee height, and if that ball hits the ground and rolls forward an inch, it's in play. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a new one for some folks, because the instinct when you drop a ball, for a lot of people, when they see it move closer to the hole, is to pick it up. So you just really need to, and again, to be clear, this is now a rule. This is no model local rules. This is the rule.
Correct. Prior to 2023, with the help of model local rule E12, if your ball did roll forward, now this is, again, this is very specific. If you had picked out a specific reference point with a tee on the line and your ball rolled forward to that tee, then this did not apply. You would still have to redrop. If you didn't pick out a reference point prior to 2023 and you just dropped, and the point where your ball hits the ground becomes the reference point and rolls forward with model local rule E12, it's going to count that as a good drop and your ball's in play.
Yeah.
Now in 2023, E12 still exists. The
bottom line, good change, simple.
It's a great change. E12 yeah. still exists as a model local rule. It's no longer that back on the line yeah. thing that it was prior to 2023.
That's got repurposed?
It's repurposed. That's a different topic for this okay. episode. But the back on the line change, at first, before you really get into it, you may not think it's simpler. You may not think it was a good change, but it really is. It's, yeah. it's better. It's for the better.
Yeah. Okay. Last topic for today, for this February 1st episode of Spirit of the Game, Charlie Hoffman. So you did a wonderful job last year. This is not too far off. Waste management, we're coming up to the 1 year anniversary almost.
Pretty close.
And for those that have forgotten, Charlie hit his ball into a penalty area, picked out determined where the ball crossed, and proceeded to drop the ball. Taking the penalty, the ball rolled to a place that required a redrop, did it again, placed it on what he called a tuft of grass, not a tuft of grass, but a tuft of grass. And the ball then, on its own accord, after coming to rest on that tuft of grass, rolled back into the penalty area. And Charlie, much to his dismay, had to incur a second penalty stroke and went ballistic. Called out everybody, hashtag the world on this incredible injustice. Who's here to protect the player? Blah, 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 blah. Kind of made a jerk of himself, frankly. He's on the policy board for the PGA Tour and really showed his ignorance, frankly. And I think, but who got the last laugh? Charlie Hoffman, the USGA listened and the rule has now been changed. And don't get me wrong. I think this is a very good change. It just makes sense. So I'm going to say what why don't you explain, just to keep the facts very clear, what has changed? That, let's say Charlie Hoffman does an exact deja vu, does the exact same thing. What happens this year versus last year?
So I'm actually going to, let's give a shout out to Ricky Fowler, because this scenario happened to him at the Waste Management in 2019. Mm-hmm. And I think, unbeknownst to Mr. Fowler, I think he planted the original seed for this change. Now, Charlie Hoffman's public title.
Right, but let me interject.
May have watered that seed.
Well, I was going to say, because Ricky, who handled it like a gentleman, took his punishment and just went on to win the tournament. Pretty amazing, frankly. I thought a real show of class. But it shows you the squeaky wheel gets the grease. If Ricky had gone crazy, maybe, again, it raised the profile of this topic. So go ahead.
It may have been an interpretation in 2020 if Ricky had made more of a stink about it. Not right. Change, but essentially what it boils down to is a ball in motion. And the rules only identify four things that can move a ball: a player, an opponent, an outside influence, and natural forces. And when a ball is moved by natural forces, 99% of the time, you're going to play it from this new location. Now, what's changed in 2023 is that after a ball has been dropped, placed, or replaced, and then is back in play, and is then moved by natural forces, but is moved to a different part of the golf course, or is moved from inbounds to out of bounds, that ball needs to be replaced back on the spot it was before it moved. In Charlie Hoffman's scenario, his ball, he placed it, was placed in the general area. It was in play. It was at rest, then moved by natural forces. You know, didn't move by any other reason other than gravity or wind, maybe. And it moved from the general area to the penalty area. In 2023, if this happens in some twilight world, he does it again with Waste Management here in about a few weeks. He's not going to have to take that second penalty stroke to get his ball back into play. He's just going to take his ball from the penalty area or another ball he can substitute in this scenario. Maybe. Let me check on that one. Because normally when you replace a ball, you do have to use the original ball. But yeah, there may be an opportunity to
never simple here. Right.
It's never always, and it's never with the rules of golf. But I think because we're replacing here, I think we do have to use the original ball. Unless it becomes unrecoverable, but now we're getting in the weeds. So what essentially he's going to have to do is, because it moved from the general area to a penalty area, he's going to replace that ball back to where it was.
Well, and I think this was a really graceful, smart way to deal with it, because I was thinking, and you know, not to belabor this point, when you get to the putting green, no matter what happens, once you mark the position of the ball, that becomes a fixed point.
Once you mark and lift the ball.
Very good.
Marking the ball does not take that
Thank
ball
you.
Out of play.
Thank you.
Ball marker is only a mechanism to take the ball out of play. You lifting and replacing it is what does it.
Okay, so, well, very
please,
good. You get my
please continue.
Yes, thank you for that. That's why I'm the spirit of the game guy and you're the letter of the law guy. No, so that becomes a fixed point. So no matter what happens, the ball, your next stroke is going to be played from there. So now they didn't go all the way to say when a ball has been dropped, placed, replaced, no matter what, you're going to play your next stroke from there. They said if the ball is moved by natural forces outside of the changes to a different part of the game board, then you're going to have to replace it. So even if it rolled from the fairway 20 yards, still staying in the fairway using the general area, that ball's still in play. You don't put it back. So I thought it was I never would have thought of that. But it solves the problem of the Charlie Hoffman, which frankly is a problem, or Ricky Fowler, without really kind of going all the way to say once a ball's been dropped, placed, replaced, it's the fixed point at that point. What I like about it is it still helps preserve, play the balls that lies on course as you find it, and that natural forces are going to have to be dealt with.
What I also like about it, I'll wrap it up, but it keeps some equity in that, in where, you know, in Charlie Hoffman's scenario, when it moves from the general area to a penalty area, it's helping not penalize that player, you know, with that penalty, with the ball now being in a penalty area. However, like I said, it does keep some equity, where if it rolls from a penalty area, I don't know why you would be dropping in a penalty area unless you were dropping another penalty area. Mm-hmm. But let's say if you were in a bunker and it blows it out of the bunker into the general area, unfortunately, you know, you're going to have to replace that ball back in the bunker because it did move from one part of the golf course to the other. And I do like how they also included rolling from inbounds to out of bounds. That is also, it kind of keeps that same principle with moving from its spot to somewhere else.
Okay. I think we covered it for this episode. You got anything else you want to share?
No, I think, it's a good start to the new year. We're going to have some rules seminars coming on the website here shortly. They may be posted by the time this episode goes live. So, if you're curious to hear more about 2023 changes or just to learn something new about the rules, sign up for one of those rules seminars. There's going to be one close to no matter where you are in the state. Unless you're, you know, somewhere in the far reaches near Ballymeal, but, that's all I got for
awesome. Well, I need more cowboys.